to me, you need your best lineup caller. So if I was picking a team, I would 100% have Ian Henderson. I think he's the best lineup caller there.
For the best Lions coverage this summer, subscribe to the OTB Rugby podcast stream on the OTB Sports app.
The Olympic Show on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland.
You're very welcome along to the Olympic Show here on Off the Ball in conjunction with Indeed, proud sponsor of Team Ireland. We're live every day across the coming weeks on our social channels. It's all with thanks to Indeed, who proudly support Team Ireland at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. Indeed believes the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talent. And check out the hashtag Talent Unleashed. Plenty to talk about. It's not quite been the medal-laden Sunday that we had hoped. A lot of near misses for the Irish team, including Thomas Barr, who was hoping to go for the second consecutive games to the 400 metres hurdles final. Disappointment for him, particularly in the last few minutes. An appeal had been launched, but reported from Tokyo by reporter Cathal Dennehy, no joy for any potential Irish appeal regarding tonight's 400 metres hurdles. I understand there was insufficient video evidence of potential infractions in the second heat where issues were raised, so the games are officially over for Tom Barr. It follows the Waterford runner earlier clocking 48.26 in his heat. He had a slight clip on a hurdle midway through the race too, which has cost him a place in the final, where he was in fourth place back in 2016. Then it emerged there was some doubts about the Italian athlete Alessandro Sibilo, who was in the second semi-final, but it looks like that appeal is now going to fail. So Thomas Barr's time at the Games has come to an end. Also, disappointment in the steeplechase earlier on today for the Irish athletes. We've a lot of hope of our athletes getting through to finals after particularly the mixed relay team doing so well, but both Michelle Finn and Eilish Flanagan not progressing in the 3,000 metres steeplechase. Delighted to say that Niamh Tallon from Her Sport is with us now. Niamh, how are you getting on?
How are you doing?
Looking at Thomas Barr particularly, he's ran his second best time of all time. If he had run this time back in Rio, he would have breezed into the final. But unfortunately, the opposition around him were that little bit faster this time around. And the smallest of mistakes has now cost him going sub 28-38, which would have potentially put him into the final.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for Barr, he was definitely in a really competitive semi. He was with Warholm and Rye Benjamin, and there's no doubt about it that they are two of the best athletes in the event. He was really unlucky to have clipped that seventh hurdle, and it was likely that he would have run a personal best, but there's very little room for error in hurdles, and it did cost him. He had a little bit of a stumble. Managed to regain composure pretty well, but look, it was really a competitive heat anyway, and you know, he was hoping to get in that kind of fastest loser spot, but was unlucky, you know, not to. In terms of like the context of the trips and falls, Jaheel Hyde of Jamaica also actually tripped, and he actually fell, and he had been leading the third semi-final, and so, you know, he completely went out. The time that Barr run was 48.26, which actually won Heat 3 by McMaster. So, you know, it's difficult to say, like, obviously he was in the most competitive, you know, semi-final with Warholm and Roy Benjamin, but it's difficult to know if he was in one of the other semi-finals had he gone through. He said he's looking to race a few more you know, competitions this season to really try and run the personal best that he feels he has. Disappointing to hear that the appeal hasn't gone through. You know, I think he would have liked to be in that final. He was obviously there in 2016. But look, it's part of sport, and I think he's you know, mature enough to know that, and hopefully we'll see him have the opportunity to run a personal best and probably a national record later this season.
Yeah, World Championships very much on the horizon, and still Thomas Barr plenty of time, I would imagine, Niamh, to come back for the next games in 3 years' time. Like, he's, I think, only going to be 31 when those Paris games come around, and the window to be filled in between these two is that bit shorter, given it's 3 years as opposed to four now.
Yeah, absolutely. And when Gaelic was talking to him after, like, he certainly didn't say, I'm, you know, going to hang up the spikes yet. And he looks like he's looking, you know, on to the next couple of years. And, you know, in 2016, he had experienced injuries kind of in the lead up to Rio, and, you know, had success there. And, you know, he's saying that he feels like he's in the best shape of his life, and, you know, there's a personal best in him. So it'd be really great for him to get a personal best under the belt, you know, before the end of this season, and, you know, see what more he can do and build on it from there. But it doesn't sound like, you know, that Paris is out of the question. And as you mentioned, it is only 3 years away, so it'll probably make him hungrier for it, and that he'd be really looking to get into that final. You know, he said that he's delighted to be part of, you know, the 400 metre hurdles really progressing. It's a really competitive event at the moment. You know, Warholm is absolutely flying, Roy Benjamin as well. So, you know, it's competitive, and to have an Irish person in the mix for that is brilliant.
Wasn't to be this morning for Michelle Finn or for Eilish Flanagan, 9th and 12th respectively in their heats in the 3000 steeplechase. But watching a little bit of it this morning, like, sweltering heat was the first thing that you noticed. The stadium looked really hot, temperatures got really high. They both put in pretty decent runs, but unfortunately both their heats were pretty quick.
Yeah, look, to be honest, for Eilish Flanagan, I think that's absolutely a success. You know, she's 24 years old. She narrowly qualified for the Games through the rankings, and she actually said that she thought she would have been a little bit more burnt out with all the races she thought she had to do to qualify. She ran a personal best this morning of 6 seconds, which is, you know, a phenomenal amount of time to take off over 3,000 metres, as you said, in a hot and humid conditions on her Olympic debut. So, look, I think that's, you know, she's going out there for experience. 2024 is what she's looking for. You know, she didn't have, you know, loads and loads of time to prepare for this game. So the fact that she's there running a personal best, having, you know, felt that she might have been burnt out when she actually got there, I think really is a success in her books. She has now got the third time on the all-time Irish list and set a new Northern Irish record. So I think she will be quite pleased with that. She said to PB here in these conditions on this stage, to that a lot of people wouldn't be enough, but that she's decently happy with that. So I think it's something that she can be very proud of and is happy with. Then in terms of Michelle Finn, it's her second Olympic Games. She ran 9:36.26, which is, you know, 7 seconds off her personal best of 9:29.25. She said that she didn't go when she needed to go. You know, she 100% thinks that she can run faster, and actually 10 seconds faster. So she's a bit frustrated. You know, it is her second game, so, you know, she would have expected that she had the experience, but, you know, she said she felt that she would be sadder than she actually is, and, you know, we know that she's in good form, like, she's been in good shape for the season, but, you know, didn't perform on the day.
What about this mixed relay competition? You know, first time, so therefore we're expecting Olympic records to be broken. In the end, it took a new Olympic best time for Poland to take gold. But the Irish team performed very admirably over the couple of days. Unlike some of the bigger nations when it came to that final, Ireland didn't have the luxury of being able to make some subs and to have some freshness for yesterday lunchtime. But I really, really enjoyed the mixed relay as an event.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and, you know, you don't know what way countries are going to run it as well, in terms of, you know, there's not a set format in, you know, for male female, or, you know, people can mix it around. So look, I think it's a really good performance from the Irish team. You know, they made an Olympic final, they're all really proud, and you can tell by them that they're absolutely chuffed with the result. They had, you know, they ran 2 seconds faster than the time that they had hoped to run, and absolutely smashed the Irish record. Yeah, as you said, in terms of the, you know, other teams had the luxury of swapping in athletes for that, and, you know, the Irish team didn't, and they came out and they really gave it a good go. They're very competitive, and it'd be interesting to see where this could go over the next couple of years, and if the mixed relay is something that we could focus on. Tom Barr was involved in the qualification of the relay and obviously didn't run it. It was very close to his personal events. So, you know, there are potentially other people that can get involved and make this a faster team. It's just whether it becomes a priority for certain athletes or not. We have more to come from Phil Healy. You know, she's up in the 200 metres and the 400 metres as well. Both going to be very exciting races. The 200 metres is going to be incredible. If the 100 metres is anything to go by, you know, there was a 1-2-3 for Jamaica there in claiming the medals. Elaine Thompson-Hera, she claimed the gold in the 100 metres, and she'll actually be in Phil's heat. So she's lining up against some of the fastest people in the world, obviously. And, you know, she actually has second best, season's best at the moment. So look, we know that Phil is a performer. Be really exciting to see how she gets on. She's going out there looking to get into a semi-final or a final. Her performance at Europeans in March shows that she has the talent. She had that European final and she wants more. Dina Asher-Smith is now out of the mix. She had an injury a couple of weeks ago and she's actually made the decision to pull out. So it opens up things a little bit. There's a lot. It's very fast. But look, we know that Phil will put absolutely everything into it, and she's clearly elated from the performance of the relay as well.
Yeah, Phil Healy's shown some good form, and you know, eventually this might be a case of iron sharpens iron, because Adeleke is now very much in the background in the sprint competitions and potentially coming for Phil Healy's record and also for Phil Healy's place on the national team between now and the Paris Games. Adeleke said to us in the show a couple of weeks ago she was a little bit disappointed not to be involved in the relay team, such has been her form in America. So as a result, Phil Healy is just going to continue to get pushed, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, they're all pushing each other on massively. From the 200 metres, the 400 metres, the 100 as well, like everybody is driving each other on at the moment. Rashida is certainly a huge talent, and I think will be really in the mix for Paris. Unfortunate to miss out on the 200 metres herself, for this Games. In terms of the 400 metres, look, some people think that she should have been considered for the team, and I'm sure she was considered, but in terms of actually putting her on the relay, there are a lot of talented 400 metre runners there who have done it more than she has. She had done the 400 over in college, but she's not a 400 meter runner. Like, she predominantly runs the 100 and 200. So when you have other athletes that are there and you have proven results, it's likely that they're going to be picked instead. Rashida, I think, will be really pushing for that. From an individual perspective, I think we will see her there potentially on a relay. Dervla O'Rourke was talking about, like, let's look at relays and maybe we could have a 4x100 or, male or female relay in the future, which would be amazing. I think there's a few other people that we should be kind of looking out for in terms of athletics for Tokyo. We obviously have Ciara McGeehan and Sarah Healy in 1500 metres. Ciara will be looking to make a final. She has her 10th place in Doha from the World Championships in 2019. She has the experience, she has the talent. That's what she'll be seeking to do. It'll be a difficult event. Stefan Hassan from the Netherlands will be in it, and Faith Kipyegon also. They're very quick athletes, but Ciara will absolutely be putting it on the line. She'll want to be up there and in the mix.
Yeah, McGeehan, particularly with that major experience and major medal experience before, is always carrying a weight of expectation when she goes in. Rhys McClenaghan, Niamh, unfortunately, like, it's very difficult when you're an athlete who qualified so impressively 8 days before a final, and then you have to sit around the Olympic Village. You go into a final where literally you've got one shot, and an ever so slight slip on the pommel horse earlier cost him contention for a medal.
Yeah, look, I think he'd be absolutely gutted. He has said that he thinks he's the type of person to turn a negative into a positive, and that's what he's hoping to do. He's going to leave the arena with the incredible experience becoming an Olympian and the first Irish gymnast to be an Olympic finalist. I think we're going to see massive progression in gymnastics over the next while. We have, obviously Rhys, and then we also have Meg Ryan, who is a, recent leaving cert student, who also competed. Rhys, it's a slight incorrect finger placement that knocked him off the horse. He got up, he did it again, and it's really impressive what he can do, but that's what it does come down to. If he can really turn that into something that will drive him on. He's only 22 years old. He will be around for Paris, and he will be looking to go for that gold again. There was no question that gold was what he was looking for. He has talked about it. That's what he was looking for. But it wasn't to be on this occasion. And there's been a couple of highs and lows in terms of the Olympic Games this time around for Ireland. There's a couple of, other athletes that we would have expected to be on podiums that haven't quite made it and will also be gutted. But I think for Rhys, unlike some of the athletes, time is on his side.
Yeah, and look, crucially, as we said in the pay-per-view earlier, it's not all about medals when it comes to going along to the Olympic Games, and that has to be remembered too. Niamh, thanks a million for joining us on the Olympic show.
No problem. Thank you.
You're watching the Olympic Show here on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland. We're live every day across the Olympics on our social channels. All thanks to Indeed. We're proud to support Team Ireland at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. Indeed believes the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talents. And watch out for the hashtag on social, Talent Unleashed. Let's see how the talent is going at Croke Park so far. Paddy Andrews, we're coming through to the quarter hour mark in the game between Dublin and Kildare. How are things going at GAA headquarters?
Yes. 17 minutes gone. It's Dublin 5, Kildare 3. It's a pretty cagey enough affair, but Kildare have started quite well. Like we said beforehand, Daniel Flynn is playing inside with Jimmy Hyland in a two-man full forward line. Davy Byrne is the man being tasked with picking him up. And to be fair, Daniel Flynn is moving well. He's just an opportunity here for a score. He's just been dispossessed. But 5-3 to Dublin. Dean Rock has scored 2 points. Cormac Costello, Kieran Kilkenny and James McCarthy on the score sheet for them. John Small is flying it. No signs of his injury. And Dublin just settling into control now and keeping the ball 2 points up.
All right, we'll chat again to Paddy Andrews at half time in the game, and we'll have a reaction from Croke Park a little bit later on too. Time just to have a look at the boxing then, because it's not been the Sunday that we had hoped from an Irish perspective for two different reasons really. Kurt Walker very narrowly losing out on split decision, 3-2 this morning, and Aidan Walsh didn't get a chance to go through the ropes where he was looking to get to the welterweight final. He wasn't able to fight against Pat McCormick because of the most unusual injury that he picked up after he won his quarterfinal in Friday morning. He decided to copy Michael Carruth and do the leap, came down awkwardly on his ankle, and ultimately that sprain which was picked up meant that he was unable to fight. To have a chat about both guys and also to look forward a bit to Kelly Harrington's action on Tuesday, where she'll look to win a medal as well. We're joined by boxing writer Kevin Byrne. Kevin, how are you getting on?
Not too bad, Will, and yourself?
Yeah, we'll start with Aidan Walsh maybe, because you know the news broke at around 9:30, 10 o'clock last night that he wasn't going to be able to compete. We kind of had conflicting reports after the fall that he took. There was initially some of the reporters had spotted that he was in a wheelchair coming out on Friday, and then Michaela Walsh was on the Olympic show with us on Friday afternoon, and she played it down. She was like, ah, no, the brother's fine. It was just a precaution. He'll be absolutely fine to fight this weekend. But obviously concern was there straight after he went over, and we saw the photos of how awkwardly he came down on his right foot.
Yeah, we kind of found the clips immediately after it happened, and it did look like he took a serious wince. Anyone who's ever sprained their ankle before knows that they wouldn't be able to fight a couple of days later, like let alone climbing the stairs and things like that are quite difficult if you've sprained your ankle. Word coming kind of unofficially from the camp was that it was going to be very difficult for him to make his semi-final with Britain's Pat McCormick. But the Irish team kind of put it out that he was going to be fine. I didn't really believe them at the time, and I saw Michaela Walsh kind of coming out and reassuring people that he was going to be fine, but I guess they wanted to keep the British people guessing, and they also wanted to give Aidan Walsh every chance to make it, because you know they have a good team of physios and they have good medical care, and you know it looked like it's an Olympic semi-final. You know, you'll do anything to get in there, and you know a lot of people would have to be, you know, wild horses couldn't drag them away from the fight, but unfortunately Aidan Walsh wasn't fit to make it. Disappointing.
He's a stylish fighter too. Like, his coach was speaking to us on Friday, said he calls him the White Cuban because of the way that he goes about his work within the ring. He is a very busy boxer. He's got a lovely style, and look, he's no one can take away the fact he's coming back with a bronze medal, and we have seen some of the potential from Aidan Walsh being realised here, haven't we?
Well, absolutely. He's quick on his feet. You know, his feet are essential to his game plan. He likes to use the entire ring. He likes to move around. He probably covers, you know, 5,000 meters during the course of a fight. In the third round of his medal-winning fight, he was warned to box and not run. So he can be frustrating for opponents to fight. He's not nonstop on the go. And I guess to go in against Pat McCormick, maybe nursing an injury. I always had a hunch that if he was anywhere below kind of 80% fit, he wouldn't fight, because he would have been effectively having to go totally against his own style into like a rock'em sock'em kind of contest against Pat McCormick, which would have played right into Pat McCormick's hands. But I am disappointed, Will, like, just because, you know, the extent of his injury hasn't been revealed yet, and we don't know how badly damaged it is. He might have a fracture, he might have severely torn ligaments. That information hasn't been given out yet. But it's just this, you know, you kind of hope like he could have taken all the painkillers and strapped himself up and got in the ring against Pat McCormick, because McCormick has a cut in his eye, and it might just take one round to cut to open that. And the referees at this Olympics are quite strict on cuts. They're pulling lads on cuts, and suddenly Walsh could be in a final, have another couple of days to recover. But we definitely saw him at his best. He beat two African opponents, from one for Cameroon, one for Mauritius, and he looked sensational. You know, he was an outsider to make the medals, but he got a good draw. And he showed his best, and you can't ask for much more than that. No. Just, it's very disappointing that I didn't get to see him against McCormick, because he's 0-3 against Pat McCormick. And we've seen Irish guys go in to fights at the Olympics against British opponents. Like, we saw Darren Sutherland go in, he was 4-1 up against James De Gale in 2008, but De Gale pulled it back. We saw John Evan go into an Olympic final against Luke Campbell, and he had a couple of wins against Campbell, but Campbell pulled it back. So these kind of things count for nothing when you get to this, the heat of the Olympic battle. So there was always a chance and always a hope, but not to be.
Crushing, really, for Kurt Walker, isn't it, to lose out to Duke Reagan of America this morning because of the nature of the defeat, like losing on a 3-2 split, where once he got into the fight, I thought Kurt Walker was pretty impressive this morning, but also having knocked out the world champion and the number one seed in the featherweight last 16, he would have thought the draw has opened up at that point for him to win a medal.
Yeah, he didn't have it easy, did he? He like 1-2-3 fights were all difficult. Duke Reagan is a professional boxer, 4-0 and composed. And he was a tremendous amateur before he turned professional as well. He won the first round. Walker came back and won the second. And then I guess it was a bit of a pick'em fight. The big surprise for me was more judges gave Kurt Walker the third round than they gave him the second. So I think he won four out of five judges gave him the nod in the third round, but only three of the five judges gave him the nod in the second round, which kind of seems a bit warped to me. It seems a bit back. Some of the judging has been a little bit questionable out there. I wouldn't cry robbery, because Reagan, you know, probably, you know, you could say that Reagan deserved to get his hand raised at the end. But also, if Kurt Walker had won, I don't think the USA would have been complaining too much. Walker fought brilliantly. He's got everything in the locker. He can adapt. He can fight in the back foot. But then all of a sudden, if he loses the round, he can go forward as well and attack and go to war. We saw him do that in the second round. We saw him do that in the third round against Spain in his opener. He's got a little bit of everything. He's determined. He's a little warrior. And I'm desperately disappointed for him to miss out on the medal, because he's performed the best out of the Irish team out there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was chatting to Eric Donovan last week, and he saw the draw and went, look, this is mental difficult to try and win a medal. But his thinking on Walker was, he's a very sticky opponent for anyone who's going to step in the ring against him, and he's the type of guy, particularly if someone tries to fight him on the inside, he is really good at manoeuvring around and avoiding shots. And we saw a lot of that from Kurt Walker over the last couple of fights.
Yeah, well, one of Kurt Walker's, when he's out of competition, one of his big sparring partners is Michael Conlon. Like, Michael Conlon's in line to be a world professional champion, and he's a former IEBA world champion as well. You know, you're not going to get any better than that. The Spanish guys, the Uzbeks, they're not going to have nearly anybody as good as Michael Conlon to go to battle with on a regular basis. So that's who Kurt Walker prepared with when he won the European title a couple of years back, and he's done rounds with him ahead of these Olympics, and so he's ready, and they were very confident in him getting over the line. Didn't matter who they threw at Kurt Walker. I think John Conlon and Zoranti were very confident he could beat anybody, and once you saw him implementing the tactics and showing adaptability in the first fight and then doing the same in the second fight, I guess the sky was the limit. But it's a big shame for him. It's very disappointing, but I'm sure he's got a big future in the sport.
Depends whether he's going to be amateur or professional. He still has that decision to make, and he was pretty non-committal, understandably, when he was on the telly earlier. Kind of an unusual circumstance as well, Kev, where eventually it was going to happen that Billy Walsh was going to be in the opposite corner to Zorantia for a big fight. And I'm sure from Billy's point of view, this is fantastic from the US program to now have one of his fighters coming through and winning a medal at these games.
Yeah, I think he's going to feel a bit sick, to be honest with you. I spoke to him recently on a podcast I did, and he was telling me how in 2016, when it looked like Michael Conlon was going to fight Shakur Stevenson for a medal, and we all know what happened to Michael Conlon against the Russian, he got robbed that day. But Walsh was thinking about not actually participating in the bout, letting his assistant take the corner that day, because he couldn't bring himself to then direct his USA fighter against an Irishman. But he had to do that today for the first time in a major tournament, let alone in the Olympic Games, for a medal. Stakes were so high. I guess they got the win, so they got it right. The USA are doing really well. They've won two medals today. One won a couple of days ago. They've got Keyshawn Davis, a lightweight. He's in the quarterfinals. Looks nailed on to win a medal. So they're about to win four medals. That would be their best performance since 2000. So, you know, well done to Billy Walsh and his team. They've kind of woken the sleeping giant over there in the States.
Yeah, and there's always that feeling that it's kind of when a top Irish coach does well elsewhere, and you look at Eddie Bulger taking his skills elsewhere too, like these guys were probably so key to a very successful period for Irish boxing. It always feels like one that's got away when we see our coaches being successful elsewhere.
Well, big time. You know, like I think the Irish boxers out there in Tokyo, they left it all in the ring. I couldn't fault any of them for their efforts, and a lot of them got it tactically right. But you know, at the end of the day, four of the seven boxers lost their first fights. You know, 10 bouts, 5 wins, 5 losses. Not kind of, you know, disappointing, tough draw, everything like that, but not exactly the form of the Cuba of Europe, as Ireland were looking to become. Like, Cuba have won 12 fights, lost one out there. Britain have won 5 medals, and they're, you know, so far in line to win 7. That would be their best ever Olympic Games. You know, 5 is the record. They've won 5. They're looking to go 7. So, like, we're getting maybe a little bit overtaken. And, yeah, we can't afford to lose our best talents to foreign countries. You know, these are internationally renowned coaches, who've been there, done that. Like Billy Walsh Rossini, he's at his, I think, 6th Olympic Games. Like, that sort of experience should be in an Irish corner, is now directing the USA. But, you know, what can you do? It's happened. You have to move on from it.
Well, if Kelly Harrington secures a medal on Tuesday and it turns out that they bring 2 medals in boxing home from these games, it's too better than what happened with all the expectation going into 2016. But will that be seen kind of as par for the course? 2 medals, given what would have been expected out of this team going to the games?
I think 2 medals is pretty good. I think 2 medals probably papers over a couple of cracks, but 2 medals can't be sniffed at either. I was chatting to even Huey Russell there during the week. He won the bronze medal at the 1980 Olympics, and he was the first Irishman to win an Olympic medal for 16 years, back to Jim McCourt in Tokyo, actually, as it happens. And just saying that people can't get too blasé about the Irish team going out and winning medals. They should be celebrated. So we should celebrate Aidan Walsh's bronze medal, and hopefully Kelly Harrington can get over the line and go get gold, you know, because there's only been 2 Irish gold medalists in the past, and Kelly Harrington's looking good. She was, I don't want to be insulting by saying workmanlike in her first fight, but she just was businesslike. She got the job done. She didn't look like she overextended herself. She didn't show her full arsenal, her full form, but it's there. We've seen it in the European qualifiers. We've seen her building towards these games. She gave a very mature interview afterwards that she was just, she's cool, isn't she? She's ready to go. She's going to be very hard to stop. If Kelly Harrington wins a gold medal, you know, it's a great Games for Ireland. We do not win gold medals very often.
Delighted to say Jason Quigley is going to be with us to break down Harrington's fight on tomorrow evening's show. But I was just thinking as well, Kevin, when it comes to Harrington here, maybe the break in the Olympics being pushed back a little bit has not been a bad thing for Harrington, because she was carrying an injury and then went and boxed really well at the European qualifiers. So she's actually coming into Tokyo in pretty decent form.
She's beaten everybody. Everybody worth mentioning. You know, there's a Thai boxer still in the draw. Sudaporn, she beat her when she became world champion. The British boxer Caroline Dubois, next big thing. You know, sister of Daniel Dubois, the rising star at heavyweight. Kelly Harrington beat her at the European qualifiers, and now it looks like they could meet again. I wouldn't write off Caroline Dubois, super fighter, but you know, Kelly looks to have the sign over her. There's another one, professional champion, Maiva Hamadouche from France. Kelly has beaten her. So the only one left really is Mira Potkinen, you know, an old Irish nemesis.
That name keeps coming back, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. She's got wins over Katie Taylor, knocked her out of the Olympics last time. She's beaten Amy Broadhurst. She's got a couple of wins under her belt against Kelly Harrington. So she's going to be a massive opponent. And, you know, I hope Kelly gets her, and I hope she gets her and she can beat her, because then she's truly, the greatest lightweight in the world.
No harm either. I was just going to say, no harm either that fight against Nicolai on Friday morning didn't really push her too much. She was able to just get out there, get the job done in her first Olympic bout. That's now over. Like, she can rely on the great major experience she's picked up over the last 5 years when she goes into this medal fight, can't she?
Yeah, I think she's the focal point of the team. I think she's the leader of the team. She's the most well known. She's carried the burden into this Olympic Games, almost like Katie Taylor in 2012. She's the name, you know. Everybody's looking to her. She paraded with the flag, and she seems to be carrying the weight quite lightly. She's you know, she went out there and she did her stuff with minimum fuss. The Algerian opponent she has is pretty good, and it's definitely no walkover. You know, I wouldn't be putting the mortgage on it, but let's hope Kelly Harrington has enough in the tank to get past her, then take on Caroline Dubois and beat her, and then into the final. You know, great days then again.
And to come out of Katie Taylor's shadow is no easy thing to do either. Like, literally, it's once in a that Katie Taylor went professional, Kelly Harrington then becomes Ireland's lightweight hope. And there was already talk, like, once she picked up European and world medals, it was 2020, she's going to go to Tokyo and, you know, potentially carry on that legacy of Katie Taylor winning gold back in 2012. But I found the interviews with Kelly Harrington really interesting over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, Sean McGoldrick's written about it really well in the papers today about the fact that she sees herself as not being defined by an Olympic Games. She, even at various different stages, didn't know if she was going to go to the Olympics because of everything that happened with COVID. She says she's going over there to enjoy the occasion, but her life outside the ring is going to be as important as what happens over the next few days.
Absolutely. Like, you know, she's got her young family there, she's got her dog, she's got her partner, she's got her job, friends and family, you know, all rooting for her. She's got a life outside of boxing. She's not focusing completely on it. A lot of it is, you know, it's protective talk, isn't it? You know, so you don't get all encompassed, all wrapped up in it's this or everything. But, you know, it means the world to her. She's been around boxing nearly as long as Katie Taylor. It's just that she took a lot longer for her talent to really flourish. Like, the first Irish international, I think, took place against England back in something like 2008. Katie fought on it, but Kelly Harrington fought on it as well. So she is around a really, really long time. It just took till about 2016 for her to completely come out of the shadow and step into the number one position herself. Like, in 2016, she won a world medal at 64 kilos. And it's funny, like, her Twitter handle still says Kelly 64 kg. Just maybe to demonstrate where she came from. But before that, she was a welterweight, you know, so she was just getting fitter, stronger, sharper. Once she stepped into lightweight, once Katie Taylor vacated the stage, she immediately took over. Like, she's won her world title and looked brilliant doing it. She's got kind of everything in the locker. I found her really enjoyable to watch as well. She's so smart. She sets a lot of traps. And when it comes to this form of boxing, this kind of amateur style but with a bit of a professional kind of touch in the scoring, she just has ways of really dominating and winning her fights quite clearly. Like, anyone watching the boxing these days will say, because it's such a sprint, and if both boxers show up, like Duke Reagan against Kurt Walker, if both boxers show up and implement their game plans and really perform well, it can be really difficult to split them. But Kelly Harrington has a way of making other people, you know, of dominating people and just making them miss, making them look frustrated, and then landing her shots on the counter. So, you know, let's hope she can keep doing that. She's got the experience edge over Caroline Dubois if she gets that far, and then, you know, could be set up for the big one against the Finn.
And, you know, when it comes to this scoring system on the final note, Kevin, you got to be busy in all these fights. Like, it's the one that probably caught up with Walker a little bit this morning, is that you started the first round a little bit slowly. You're rewarded under this scoring system for being busy throughout the bout.
Yeah, I was very surprised he lost the first round. I was convinced he'd come out and win it, as he did against the Uzbekistan fighter, and then we'd get ourselves drawn into a bit of a war, and then he'd have to adapt and fight again, because his tactics have been so spot on throughout the tournament. But to lose the fight, the first round, and then have to adapt, I guess it showed his heart, it showed his hunger to and his ability and talent to be able to turn it around and nearly win the fight. But definitely, it's all action, and you have to be absolutely switched on for the whole thing. Like, losing the first round can be pretty bad for your chances. Like, we've seen Kenneth Egan and Eric Donovan describe it all week on RTE. Win the first round. And I'm sure that's been drilled into the Irish team over in Tokyo all week as well.
Well, we'll see what happens with Kurt Walker for 2024. Kevin Byrne, thanks a million for joining us for an update in the boxing.
Thanks, Will. Cheers.
You've been watching the Olympic show here on Off the Ball. It is with thanks to Indeed, live each day here on Off the Ball during the Olympics. They're a proud partner of Team Ireland. It's all with thanks to Indeed, who proudly support Team Ireland at the Olympics. Indeed believes that the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talent. Watch out for the hashtag on social media, Talent Unleashed. We'll take a very short break. When we come back, we'll check in with Croke Park for a halftime on Kildare in Dublin.
The Olympic Show on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland.